Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
David Eichel, Sean Bock, 24/7 Sports, HawkeyeInsider.com. Pretty much an instant reactions form cast following the bye week coordinator availabilities. Phil Parker, LeVar Woods, and of course, the one everybody wants to hear from, Brian Ferentz, met with the media today. And Sean, I gotta say, I try not to give us media members too much props, but I really think that the questions that were needed to ask Brian, for example, were fair. I think Brian even responded as if they were fair questions. I think we got some good stuff out of him. But at the same time, it really doesn't feel like he did anything to help cool down the temperature. But to be fair, what can you really say at this point to kind of cool down the temperature of what's going on with the Iowa offense? I guess let's just start from the top. What were your first impressions from the offense of just Brian's talk?
Yeah, I honestly thought he did a pretty good job of addressing the media. And like you said, Dave, I think he's also been put in a tough spot. I mean, I guess he's not all to blame for the offensive issues. There's no doubt about that. I think there, he said too, like, it's kind of tough to identify the root cause of it because football is an 11-man game. And I know it's a cliche. I know a lot of people gave him some flack on Twitter for that quote, but at the end of the day, with how Iowa runs its offense and how these things are put together, you have to have most of the guys working in unison. And that's something that they've struggled with. And whether that be Spencer Petras missing a couple throws here and there, the run game not being as good as it needs to be, the offensive line struggling. I think the only position that he really said was, you know, consistent was tight ends. And you look at that Rutgers game too, I think that was really the only time where the tight ends were not overly great. And I mean, Luke Lachey, I mean, that was the Michigan game. Luke Lachey had his best game, but Sam Laporta had a couple of drops. I thought that was pretty noteworthy. You mentioned the offensive line too. And I think the quote that really stood out was him saying that we have guys that are playing right now that we think could be really good players for us, but it's clear that they're playing earlier than we expected them to. Yeah. And, you know, I know how people could take that the wrong way too, but with Iowa, the way it recruits, the way it gets guys and the way it gets them into their program, it's a developmental program. There's no doubt about that. And I think with those guys too, like there's only a small group of guys that can come in right away and, you know, not miss a beat. But I mean, you know, it's something that, I mean, Cooper DeJean was quick, but You know, it took him a year to be where he's at now. And some guys are quicker to that than others. And, you know, that's okay. But you're seeing kind of the negative effects of that. I mean, I think with this offensive line, we talked about before, we've really underestimated the loss of Tyler Linderbaum. Logan Jones, I felt like, has done a good job. But, you know, his departure has hurt this Iowa team. And, you know, this offensive line, too, is just so young. A lot of them played last year, but, you know, everyone's different. Maybe this isn't a team where they click after year one. I mean, look at Brian Bulaga, you know, Brandon Scherff, James Vandenberg's 2012 year. You know, he was getting beat up pretty well on that offensive line. And, you know, I mean, I know they were a young line at the time, but, you know, this line may take another year. This is a year where, you know, I still think Iowa can make it to 7-5, 6-6, make a bowl game. But this might be that year, and I know people aren't going to like this, this might be that year where, you know, it's going to be a stepping stone year. It's not going to be, okay, we're going to make it to a Big Ten championship, you know, yada, 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 be 9-3, 10-2, whatever. Can't be 10-2 now. Very likely not going to be 9-3, but this might be one of those years where, okay, maybe we need this year to really, you know, find out what we need to do for next year to be that much better, to be, you know, a better program the next few years. And, you know, maybe that starts with the offense. I get the results are very frustrating. I mean, Spencer Peterson, his third year, people would have thought he'd be more consistent. I think he's done a fine job the past couple of weeks. I mean, you can look at the Illinois game, the second half, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
First half against Illinois. And I know you disagree with me about the Michigan stuff in the second half. I thought, you know, yes, they were down. Michigan still had a decent amount of their starters in, but they were still pressing up. I mean, I think they put some backups in, but I think really just like everything came together in that second half. And, you know, it's, I mean, you got to give your hat tip to Illinois too, but, you know, just speaking, and sometimes teams are just better than you. And I think that's some things that some people maybe fail to realize. And, you know, it's easy to blame the coordinators and stuff, but it's a group thing. Like Brian kind of mentioned it. It's a committee.
And that's what I'm saying. Like people hyper-focus in on Petrus, but Sean, you know, for as great as Iowa's done on the O-line over the years and developing, we aren't talking about this enough. They completely whiffed on two offensive line recruiting classes. Let's take a trip down memory lane, right? 2018. Now, to be fair, Cody Ince, had he not medically retired, I think would be a very key part of this team because he probably would still be eligible. He'd be playing. So Cody Ince would have been good. Jack Plum hasn't panned out the way people have wanted him to. Jeff Jenkins transferred. Obviously, Tyler Linderbaum was a big hit. But let's go to that 2019 recruiting class, specifically for the offensive line. Ezra Miller, I know there was more factors to his time at Iowa in terms of mental health and everything. He couldn't return to Iowa after being medically retired, but you're allowed to go to a different school, so he didn't return to Iowa. He's currently at Nebraska. Tyler Andres hasn't turned out. Justin Britt has had a very injury-riddled career. Noah Fenske is now at Colorado. I mean, Sean, these are two full offensive line classes where you're not getting one significant contributor. And when you look at Iowa's success stories over the years, yes, you have your Tristan Wirfs, you have some of those other guys, but at the same time, you have those fourth year guys, those fifth year guys that take steps forward on the line. And that's why when you look at the offensive line now, you have four sophomores and one freshman starting on the line. And again, I think in due time, they're going to be really, really good. But right now it's just, it's, what do you say? Shaky at best. And I tweeted this from after I heard Brian talk about this. Brian said, there's no one root cause with the Iowa offensive struggles. Now, while I think that's accurate, I don't think that's exactly inspiring confidence that you can fix these sort of things. And if I'm Brian Ferentz, you've got to be able to pinpoint one or two things right now that you can do to try to fix things, right? Just going forward to the second half of the season, give your offense some confidence and give fans some belief in somehow that they can turn this around.
Yeah. And I said too, like, I mean, it comes down to execution, and with the way Iowa runs everything, I mean, they've been able to get away with some, you know, below average wide receiver play in, or not below average, but very middle of the road wide receiver play in some years because they had a really good run game or they had a really good offensive line. But this year, when, you know, the run game kind of isn't where it needs to be, then that's where trouble ensues, and the offensive line struggles, like that's where more trouble ensues, and it's a domino effect. And I do think this line can turn it around, maybe, you know, show improvement, but I think next year is going to be really the year when we can judge what these offensive line classes have been. I mean, 2021, these guys were in high school 2 years ago. And I get it. It's frustrating. Like, these guys were highly ranked guys. I mean, Bo Stevens, Connor Colby, Tyler Helsbury were all four-star recruits on 24/7. Logan Jones was a four-star defensive tackle, but he was a defensive tackle. And Iowa has expressed a lot of confidence that he's going to be good. You know, Bo Stevens, I think, could be better. I mean, I think he was a guy that, yes, could make an impact in year one, but I think he was one of those guys that maybe needed another year as a more rotational piece,
yeah,
as opposed to this year being the star. I mean, Connor Colby, you know, I think he is a really good high upside guy that could be a potential NFL guy. You know, the results don't show it now. He's got the lowest grade, I think, of the starting offensive lineman on Pro Football Focus this year. But I think he's going to need another year or two to really, you know, see what he can develop into. There's so many, I know, and people are going to be frustrated too because they want to see these results right now, and I totally understand that. But, and I mean, people are going to be like, okay, but, you know, we thought this would be next year where things would be improved, yep. You know?
Yep.
But it's one of those things where, yes, like, I get what you're saying, but maybe at this point, yes, there could be improvement, but maybe we got to take this Iowa team for what it is right now. But at the end of the day, too, we could be having a completely different conversation right now. Yes, we could still be talking about the offensive struggles, but let's not forget Iowa could be 5-1 right now. And I know people don't want to hear that, but Iowa State, Monty Potomom holds on to the ball. It's 14-3. Illinois, Iowa makes a couple bigger plays.
They score.
Avoids the penalties.
They score a touchdown. Yes. When they get the ball at the 4-yard line.
Yes. And, you know, there's just mistakes that maybe, I mean, Brian mentioned today, there's tiny little mistakes and penalties. Like, I'm not saying this team's undisciplined by any means, but, you know, they're not catching breaks this year like maybe they did last year. And I know people are going to be frustrated with this, but that's kind of football. And, you know, those tiny breaks that maybe Iowa had last year that they didn't get this year are, you know, not coming to. And to be a good team, you got to be lucky at times. Like,
no,
I totally understand. Yeah, no, I totally understand. Like Ohio State is, you know, I mean, Alabama struggled this past weekend, but you look at Georgia last year. I mean, there were times where they got lucky. I couldn't point out specifics, but every team has gotten lucky in some regard, whether that be an opponent injured. You know, Georgia was on another planet too with that defense, but they were probably the only team that could get away with a really, you know, below average offense.
So let me ask you, Sean, really, really quick, because I want to go back to your point about Iowa could be 5-1, because I have my opinion on this. Are fans still as frustrated if Iowa's 5-1? Are they still as frustrated with this offense if Iowa got those couple breaks? And again, I hate the what if game, but I think it's applicable here.
Yeah, I definitely think they're frustrated, but I think the noise is a lot lower than it is. The noise outside the program. The noise inside the program, like, I mean, yes, there's frustration. There's understanding that, you know, this team needs to be better and this offense needs to be better. But the noise outside is a lot louder than I think what's going on inside. Now, granted, I think they're doing things this week to, you know, kind of pick it up. I mean, I know it's a bye week, but I bet there's a combination of being strategic and, you know, having pretty hard practices and being like, hey, this is unacceptable. But, you know, how much can you really change?
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In a two-week span.
You can't. And I think Brian addressed that today. He said, we're not going to come out in a five wide receiver set. And, you know, to be fair about that, I mean, they're even if they were healthy, I don't think they'd be doing that, Sean, because they don't have enough scholarship guys right now. And they said they aren't going to come out in a wildcat. But at some point, you got to try something new. And to go back to Connor Colby very quickly, I think Connor Colby, would you agree with me? Connor Colby's long-term future is an offensive guard and tackle at this point. Because I've always said move him to tackle, but I think after what I've seen from him now, I think once Caden Proctor gets on campus, you have to throw Colby back at guard, because then you have Richmond and Proctor at tackles. But right now, Colby is the best option opposite of Richmond at tackle. It just, I know it's not ideal, but he's one of the best five linemen on the team, and you have to have him, because right now Jack Plum is just not where he needs to be, because guess what? He'd probably be playing if that was the case.
I mean, even like David, like Iowa's had some unfortunate breaks too. I mean, you look at the David Davidoff situation, obviously that's complicated, but I mean, he would probably be thrown in there too this year. You know, he was pretty, I mean, outside of injuries and, you know, stuff that he's dealing with now, like there was, you know, reason to believe that he could potentially fill that role in due time or, you know, be another rotational piece. And I think Connor Colby, I mean, yes, he was a four-star. Yes, he's a highly regarded guy. I still think he's an NFL guy eventually.
I do too.
But it's like, when, how often do we see linemen at Iowa come into fruition in their fourth or fifth year as opposed to like second or third year? Like, yes, like, you know, Brian Belagas, Brandon Scherfs, Austin Blythe, the Tristan Wirfs, like those are an elite category. But who's to say like this line won't have a guy?
I think this line's going to be very good. In a year or two. I really do. I like all the guys, and I know Barnett's taking a beating right now from the fan base. Are you in the same boat as I am, Sean? That's just too early to really, you know, think about firing Barnett. I think it's too early. I think you need to get at least halfway through next year.
It's dumb. I get the frustration with it, but I think you have to remember too, like these things aren't built overnight. Like, yes, you know, over like a couple months span, like can make a little bit of a difference, but there is so much that goes into coaching that like I would, like most coaches would forget more than I would even know. And it's not even close.
Yeah.
But it's just like, if you fire someone, then you got to burn, then like you're, Kansas is a different, you know, situation. Like that place, like you couldn't get any lower than it was before from a power five perspective, but like that's rare. Like you're not gonna have that with the turnaround that they had. And you know, they've caught some breaks at the beginning of the year too. I mean, they've been a good football team, but you know, they've caught some breaks. And I think with Iowa, you know, maybe you have to go. I mean, I know people aren't happy about it, but maybe you got to go through a year where, okay, like this might be a developmental year. And then we can look at this next year as a potential year for us to, you know, and I don't want to talk too much about like next year.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think the results this year have kind of made us and made a lot of people more realistic about, you know, understanding how a program is built and understanding how, you know, guys are able to develop. And, you know, maybe it's a 7-5 year and you just kind of come to terms with it. I mean, but then once again, like, you know, Iowa could very well be 5-1 this year at this point, and we could be having a completely different conversation.
It's such a weird line to toe because, Sean, you talk about 7-5 right now. I think Iowa's fighting for bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
I think it's realistic at this point. I think you look at the schedule, there's no gimmies on that schedule anymore. There's not. And, you know, again, not to talk too much about next year, but if there's one thing I think we've learned, or Iowa coaches have to learn, two things have to happen in this next offseason, Sean. If things continue the way they do, there's got to be a coaching change. I don't know where. I'm not going to call for anybody specifically, but something has to change. The scheme has to change slightly. And two, Sean, Iowa's got to hit the transfer portal. It's not sustainable what's going on right now, especially a wide receiver, the attrition that's there. It just that they need more bodies right now. And I think that's something that they're going to have to take a deep look in the mirror on. And what about tight end? They might need to go after a highly touted tight end because Laborda will be in the NFL. They have Lachey, and maybe Stylianos comes around and becomes that second tight end that Iowa's getting next year. They have some guys that can maybe get the job done, but right now, and I asked Brian this during today, and this is something I want to talk about because and make sure I can actually find it. But I asked him flat out that, you know, when you look at what's going on right now, what can you do with this bye week and what can you focus on specifically in terms of taking that first and second step to getting to where they want to be? And I did think this was an insightful answer, Brian. One, you said they need to eliminate the negative plays. And I thought, you know, you just look at what's been going on. Iowa getting tackles for losses in the running game way too frequently. And he also brought up self-induced wounds. I mean, the penalties, and he didn't blame anybody else but Iowa. I mean, we've talked about how many times this year, Sean, where a penalty has really stopped any momentum that Iowa's offense create. Maybe Iowa rips off a big run, but a block that had nothing to do with the play gets called for a hold, like on the other side of the line. I mean, Iowa has to do that. And I think he just said what I've said all year, and I think you've echoed, they have to make the makeables. They just have to. And I do like that Brian didn't specifically throw anybody under the bus from that regard. He just said, look, all 11 positional players need to get better. And I mean, the only thing you can say, and I know we pointed to tight end, which has been good this year, but Sean, there were a couple of games where the tight ends were invisible. I think you can remember that too. We talked about, you know, the tight ends really didn't do too much. And it is one of those things where, again, I'm eager to see how Iowa comes out of this. I think Caleb Johnson's going to continue to get a bigger workload. And I like that Brian said, you know, I think we need to get the ball to the perimeter a little bit more than we're doing. I mean, you got some guys. I think maybe getting a Deontay Vines back is going to be a big deal. And, you know, Brian sounded pretty confident in what Vines could do and act like he was a pretty big breakout star of the fall, which we reported a couple times. But something I did want to also dive into, Sean, and this has been the talk of social media basically since this press conference, and I want you and I to dissect it a little bit more. He was asked about making a potential quarterback change. Now, I think, again, the noise from a couple weeks ago is much, much louder, and I think it was much more relevant before, you know, I think the other issues surrounding the offense really surfaced the way they have. But now I want to read the full exchange just for full context here so people don't misconstrue it, okay? So I believe it was Chad Lysko, the Des Moines Register, said, Brian, I wanted to ask about the quarterback. What would be the downside of going with Alex? You still have Spencer on the team, but what would be the downside of giving him a shot? And Brian said the downside of, like, he didn't understand it. And Chad said, making a change at quarterback. And Brian replied, what would be the upside? I'm not trying to be coy. What I'm saying is, what's the downside? I'm not interested in making a change for change's sake. What I'm looking at is, I'm saying, what's the upside? I don't know. There's unknown there. I know what Spencer has done. I know what Spencer can do. And I know what he does every day. That's the evaluation piece that we're talking about. That's what the decision's made on. Now there's two things I want to focus in on, Sean, then I'll let you rebuttal with that. One, I really don't know what you can say about, I know what Spencer is. I know what Spencer can do. because Alex Padilla is not exactly an unknown commodity. He started a few games last year. Iowa's biggest scoring performance of Sean came with Padilla at quarterback over the last, you know, calendar year or so. But at the same time, this really stuck out to me. I know what Spencer can do, and I know what he does every day. That's the evaluation piece that we're talking about. I don't know why, but that sentence really just kind of stuck a volume to me. Like, is Spencer doing that much more that's not being reported on, or maybe behind the scenes? Or I guess, how'd you kind of take that answer? Because, again, I know a lot of people were really upset with it.
Yeah, I think so. And I know how people are going to take that the wrong way. And, I mean, you look back at the Deuce Hogan stuff last year, I think a couple people brought that up on Twitter. But I also think it's a little bit of a different conversation. I mean, yes, but also, like, to a point, it's like he's being honest about where things are at. And I get the frustration, but it's like I think you look at – we'd have to go back and, like, watch all those games again. But, I mean, Northwestern was a very beatable opponent that – Alex beat. I'm not knocking on Alex, but yeah. I'm just saying, like, low scoring game. Minnesota, yes, there were a couple big throws that were made. And what was the other game? I mean, they look at the Nebraska game. I think that, I mean, I know the defense and special teams won that game, but
Alex got benched to that game at the end of the second half, right?
Yep. Yeah. I just think they think there's something, or they see something. I mean, and once again, I mean, you got to trust the coaching staff in this situation because they've been doing it for so long. Yep. And we're just guys that get paid to, like, analyze the game and, like, you know, see it from our point of view. But, you know, I mean, it's Iowa. Like, they're not going to want to change stuff. And I get that's frustrating. I get, like, a lot of people want them to get with the times when it's changing stuff. But it's like, you know, they see more than we see. You know, they are around it every day. Like, they understand it. You know, I think there's reason to believe that what Brian is saying when it comes to Padilla and Petras, like, it's clear. Like, there is a clear difference between those two. And, you know, I think there's other reasons why Petras has struggled. I mean, I think confidence factor might be part of it at times. I mean, Brian said it too. Like, we got guys out there that shouldn't be playing this early. Like, we think they can be really good players, but we didn't expect them to play this early. I think they can be good players, but it's pretty early. And I think, you know, without saying it, some of those guys might be at some of the receiver positions and maybe to start the year. I think Alec Wick and Jack Johnson, you know, I'm not pointing them out specifically, but I think those were two that Kirk kind of mentioned at one point as well, being guys that, you know, we didn't expect to play this early once they got here.
And Brian did say, for the record, Brian did say when he added on to that, like you said, I mean, they want to keep developing guys. More injuries certainly haven't helped in some areas. And obviously people departing, you know, the off season just kind of turnover.
And look at Brody Breck too. Like, he was hurt for most of fall camp, and he was also gone for most of the spring, and he's played the third most snaps at receiver on this team. Like, there is, you know, there's receiver position is something that needs to get better. That would be, I mean, offensive line, I think, is a big part of it. But, you know, it seems like in the past that Iowa has had at least one wide receiver that you could be like, okay, he's going to catch the ball, or he's going to get open, he's going to create separation. I know that 2017 or 2016 team, where they had very minimal scholarship guys. I think they were down to two scholarship wide receivers at that point. You know, there was some, I mean, I think Nico Reganey, but I mean, look at him.
I think it was Kelton Copeland's first year.
So that was 2017.
I'd have to double check it. It's either 16 or 17 though. Yeah.
But they were very limited at that position. But then, you know, you had Noah Fant, you had promising TJ Hawkinson. Like, you know, there was, I think it was 2017.
I think it was too. I'm fairly certain it was. But I'm with you, Sean. And again, if I always get the transfer portal,
it was 2016.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I always get the transfer portal, I think no matter what, they have to get wide receiver. They have to. Otherwise, I don't know what more you can really say. But at the same time, and this is where I want your perspective on it, Sean, how do you get guys to play in this system right now? I mean, how do you recruit guys? How do you get people excited about playing in Iowa's offense? It's tough.
Belief in stability and belief in that younger guys can come in and make an impact, and belief in the, I mean, like I said, stability. I think the quote that stood out to me about from James Rezar, the four-star quarterback commit in 2024, was he said, it's not like Brian forgot how to coach. Yeah. Like, I get the frustration, like, with the scheme, with some of the play calling. Yes, he said he needs to be better with play calling, but I think personnel is also something where there needs to be improvement, and that doesn't help. And there are just so many things that have to go right with a team to be successful. And, you know, it just hasn't this year.
It really feels like we could just sit here and dissect this over and over again. But, you know, I will say, for my final kind of piece to kind of wrap up this podcast, Sean, and I'll get your final comments after. I know people want to say, like, there's nothing that Brian can say that's going to make everything better. Okay, there's nothing, right? You agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
I thought Brian, outside of the no downside, the what's the upside thing. So actually, let me back up. When you said what's the upside, well, you're dead last in offense right now. You literally cannot get worse. And I think I get Brian's point, and I like what you said. We get Brian's point. I thought it could have been phrased better or phrased in a different way.
Well, I mean, Kirk had a couple answers like that. I mean, on Saturday and in the past, where I think things could have been phrased better, but and I get why people are going to take it out of context too. But, you know, I think when you're doing these press conferences, yes, you can give the media and fans a good idea of what's going on, but it's not like you want to give the entire picture of everything that's happening.
Oh, no question. But, you know, I will say, and I don't know if you got the same vibe, and again, I know it doesn't make a difference from fans' perspective, but I still think it's worth putting out there. I thought Brian Ferentz was very accountable. I thought he continually blamed himself. He said, I need to be better. My play calling needs to be better. I need to do this. It's ultimately reflects on me. And I think that's a big deal. And I like how he added, it's like my dad's the head coach. Like, of course there's added pressure. I'm human. Like, I feel it. So I think there's no doubt that he wants to be better. I think Brian at times overthinks the simplest things, and I think that's what getting him in trouble. But Sean, again, from my perspective, I thought Brian was very accountable. Now, does he still need to be better? Absolutely. Does it make up for anything? No. But I still think it's worth putting out there that he didn't blame anybody but himself. That was my vibe, at least.
Yeah, and the narrative that Brian is a bad football mind, just doesn't know what he's doing and wants Iowa to lose, is one of the dumbest things ever. Yeah. He took a lot of accountability today, like you mentioned. And, you know, he's a smart guy. There's just some things that haven't worked out. And, you know, I know it's like, you know, if it happens in year three, if it happens next year, depending on the personnel, I think you got to really take a look at some things. But, you know, I understand the frustration. Like, there's got to be a little bit of something that works. But, you know, you got to just have everyone execute. And, you know, you're not going to win every one-on-one battle in every play. But if you have more guys outdo the other guys, there's something that's going to be picked up and you're going to find success, but it just hasn't happened.
There's no doubt that there's probably no coordinator with more pressure on in the back half of the season than Brian Ferentz. I know Gary Barta said last week that he has full faith in Brian Ferentz, but Sean, the noise is only going to grow louder. The revenue is going to tank. And I can guarantee you that if Iowa doesn't show improvement for next football season, if Iowa doesn't make a bowl game, the fans are going to make it very well known financially that they're not going to continue to put up with the product that's being put on the field. That's fairly obvious to me. So I'm very interested to see how what Brian and the offense does for the final, you know, six games of the season, maybe seven games of the season. We'll see what happens, but we'll have much more from today's press conference. We already have a bunch of stuff up at HawkeyeInsider.com, and we're going to have that throughout the next few days as Iowa enjoys their bye week and we kind of reset for the second half of the season. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at David Eichel, at SBach247, at Hawkeyes on 247. And be sure to stay tuned to the Swarmcast and 247 Sports for all your Iowa Hawkeyes needs. Until next time, talk to you soon.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.